You're listening to Greatness Adjacent. If it's your first time here, welcome. If you've been with me before, get cozy. I started this podcast with my dear friend Mondi, but she decided she's happy for now to be home with her gorgeous kids. So I'm flying solo. But if you've been listening since the beginning and wonder where my partner is, that's the update. Let's get started. Dave Stein came and sat down with me today. He is a master superstar furniture designer and builder. He grew up on a farm in Dow, Illinois. Then he became a lawyer. Then he left that to come back to furniture design. And his story is so awesome. It's all about everything is slow made, handcrafted, sustainable. He uses lumber from the farm where he grew up. And he's just the sweetest, loveliest man. I hope you enjoyed today's talk with Dave Stein. So I'm here today with David, but you go by Dave, Dave Stein. He's a master furniture designer and maker. Is that right? Is that how you would describe yourself?
Well, that's very generous. I love that. I think
I like adding master.
A master will just run with master, master furniture designer, professional furniture maker. Yeah, we've been very fortunate to be able to make my living doing that for sure.
And it's special and amazing because I had another guest on here who is a master seamstress, tailor, couture, alteration person. And very few people work with their hands anymore. It's a dying art.
So For sure. Yeah. And I think I love that. I love working with my hands. You know, going back to my history, you know, I trained as an attorney.
I want all the stories. So you trained as a lawyer and you are from St. Louis.
Yeah. So I'm from a little town called Dow, Illinois, which is right outside of St. Louis. And if you've
heard
of Dow.
I haven't.
Well, if you have, we're related. It's that small. There's about five people there.
Cousins. I don't think I'm a cousin.
Yeah. So I grew up on a farm there and it was a dairy farm when I was growing up. We had about 1,000 acres. And we milked cows for a living. That's what we did. And it's been in my family for 4 generations. I'm the oldest in my generation. And kind of springing forward, my grandfather always beat it in my head as I was growing up. You need to figure out tax law and estate planning and things of that nature so that we can keep the farm together. This was during the 80s when people were losing their family farms because of inheritance issues and things like that. So fast forward, I knew that working with your hands and working on a farm was a really tough way to make a living. I was super lucky to be good in school and I'm a great test taker. So
that's a good skill.
Yeah. So I went to college and I went and took the SATs and did really, really well. And then I went to law school at George Washington in DC. And then I practiced law for about a year. Yeah, it was great. And it's great to be in DC.
I love DC. My mom is there.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I love it. It's a wonderful city. So you went all the way through law school, passed the bar, and were a working lawyer for 1 year.
Just 1 year. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I stuck it out for 1 year. I'm not great in an office environment. I like to be outdoors. I like self-directed.
I'm not good in an office environment.
Yeah.
Either.
Yeah. I don't do office politics very well. I tend to be blunt to probably the wrong people, you know? It's a little tough. I did enjoy my time there and I enjoyed trying to help people, you know, with their estate planning and their tax planning and things like that. And a lot of people find that kind of work really, really dry. But if you've grown up with this sort of hanging over your head, I think you have a little bit of a dog in the fight and it's a little bit more interesting.
Also, what an incredibly helpful skill to have and knowledge to have for yourself.
I tell people all the time, you know, I build furniture, but then I've got this whole law degree in my back pocket, you know, I fall back on, which is not terrible.
Whip that out at any time.
Oh, I love whipping it out at sort of weird moments when somebody's like, thinks they have one over on me.
Yes.
Yeah. It's such a jerk thing to do, but I like it.
No, sometimes just to have the ace card. Oh, that's so funny because I'm an attorney.
I happen to be an attorney.
Yeah. So how did you transfer from attorney to furniture builder, maker, designer?
Sure. Well, growing up, we really did everything on the farm ourselves. We grew our own food. We butchered our own meat. We cut down trees in the wintertime to make lumber for fences and our homes.
So it was a real deal.
Yeah, it was really. Our family really prided itself on being pretty self-sustainable. We did everything there on the farm. And it's a pretty neat way to grow up. I mean, we were like the Waltons, you know, we went to town, we had cars and trucks and stuff, but it was really just prided ourselves on.
And this is in Dow, Illinois. Mm-hmm. And how many siblings do you have?
I don't have any siblings, but I grew up with 7 cousins. So there's 8 of us in my generation. Okay. And we all lived right there on the farm within a few miles.
That sounds so fun.
Yeah. In the summertime, we would all be at my grandmother's house all summer.
Yeah.
And I remember, you know, it was basically everybody running around in shorts, no right. shirts and no shoes, just all summer long, like wild men.
Wild people.
Yeah, like yeah. wild kids.
That sounds like yeah, a really amazing childhood.
It was super fun. And my grandmother would say things like, okay, you've had your breakfast. I don't want to see you again until dinner.
Yeah, right.
And then out, you were just outdoors.
I mean, I had not on a farm, but my mother was like that too. Bye.
Yeah.
See you later.
My wife and I talk about that all the time. And you and Art have two kids?
We have two.
We have two kids as well. And, you know, I think we tended to kind of helicopter a little bit more.
Right.
We know what they're doing and they're great kids and we're so fortunate that way. But I think my parents didn't have the level of interest that I have in my kids.
They 100%. Were
like, they were living their life and they were like, hey, you'll be fine. Here's food and clothes.
Come back when you're hungry.
Yeah, go to school when we tell you.
Yes.
That was kind of it.
100%. That was the same for me.
Yeah.
So you're on this farm, seven cousins, mm-hmm. doing everything yourselves.
Yep. Yep. And so I went off to Penn State to go to undergraduate and study political science there. But while I was there, basically putting myself through college, I worked as a diesel mechanic. And so again, back to kind of learning things on the farm, I was really good with mechanical stuff. And I got a job just basically sweeping the floors. And by the time I was out of college, I was the night manager there. So I would do the overnights and run the record. So I did that and then took a year off after college and then applied to law schools. And then I went to law school in Washington, D.C. All during this time, sort of hobby woodworking, just doing whatever.
Because you enjoyed it.
Because I enjoyed it, yeah. And like, I built a bed and a nightstand and stuff when I went to college. And so then in my dorm room, you know, it looked like a Shaker showroom. It was a little silly, but my roommates seemed to enjoy having some nice stuff. And then when I got into law school, I found a little workshop where I could rent some space in, and I got a little space. And it was right about the time, do you remember when Cigar Aficionado came out and it was Sylvester Stallone and
vaguely.
Yeah, you know, they were all, everybody was cigars and big, like early 90s kind of
dark, smoky rooms.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody wanted a humidor. And I started building humidors for people.
Oh.
And then I started selling them at this little sort of clubby cigar place called Georgetown Tobacco.
Nice.
And that kind of led to a waiting list. And I was still in law school. And then when I got
out of humidors were waitlisted?
Well, yeah. I mean, mostly because I was. Full-time law school is kind of not, you can't phone it in.
No.
Yeah, you have to do the work. So I got out of law school and I got a job. And then I was sort of just doing that for a while. And in the meantime, I had met my wife, Stephanie.
And, in D.C.?
Uh-huh. Yeah. This is kind of a funny story. So
I like love stories.
I moved to D.C. with a really good friend of mine from high school. And she happened to be a lady. Her name is Brenda. She's still a best friend of mine to this day.
Was she a girlfriend?
No. We were just friends.
Friend.
Just friends.
Okay.
She happened to be taking a job down there, and I had gotten into law school. So we're like, oh, this is perfect.
Okay.
We can split rent. So we went down. We found a place. We go back, and me being me and always like trying to be handy and kind of manically busy, I'm like painting the apartment and putting up shelves. And she's like, I'm out of here. I'm walking down the street.
But dream roommate.
I've been
like,
well,
okay, you
could
pay,
ask Brenda if that's
you pay,
true.
You build those things.
Yeah. Actually, when she went down the, so she goes down the street because she sees this sign at bar opening, you know, grand opening or whatever. And I'm actually at home sewing curtains for the
you
new,
sew
the new
too?
House. If you can do it with your hands and lose money, I'm your guy.
Oh my God. Okay.
Well, so she walks down the street. She comes back an hour later and she's like, I just met your future wife. We're going down there tomorrow and I'm going to introduce you to this lady because she is fantastic.
Really?
So we went down the next night and she introduced me to Stephanie, who is now my wife. And then I basically just made it my mission to go there every time I had a free moment. And Stephanie finally agreed to go out on a date with me. And then we've been together ever since.
Okay, go Brenda.
Yeah, Brenda.
And Stephanie, your wife, she worked at this bar.
She owned it. So Stephanie, yes, she and her sister were political appointees. And then through elections, they lost their job. And then they had grown up in Toledo, Ohio. And their dad had the most famous bar in Toledo, Ohio. It was called the Peppermint Lounge, and then it became the Country Palace.
Okay.
And that's a whole nother story, but this guy was an interesting cat. And, you
know, Stephanie knew how to run a bar.
So when they lost their jobs, again, through the electoral process, the DC is crazy that way. You know,
yes,
people come and go with administrations every 2 to 4 years. So she opened this place with her sister. And then I just happened to walk in and kind of she swept me off my feet, I guess.
And after how long did she go out with you? How many?
Oh, it took 6 months. So our first date, she finally agreed to go out with me. We had just had finals. So it was mid-December. She said, I finally have an opening in my schedule. You know, she's throwing me a bone. And I said, well, this is perfect timing because I'm going home for a month. So by the time I get back, you'll probably have a new boyfriend or something. But she said, I'll keep a space open for you. So we came back. We went out on one date. And I think it freaked her out a little bit because I met her at her house, picked her up, took her out. Old fashioned. I'm pretty old fashioned. So, you know, we went out.
We had drinks.
We had dinner. Handshake at the door. Thank you so much.
Handshake.
Would you mind if I call you again? Oh, please do call me again. And then I go home and then she calls her. I found out subsequently she calls her sister. She's like, who the f*** is this guy? Like, who does that? Like, I was like, come on in. It didn't happen. So then we went out the next night and it was fireworks. So.
And that was how many years ago?
Oh, my gosh. So that would have been 1994. And I'm terrible at math. So I have
it's
no
been
idea.
A while. You yeah. and Stephanie are solid. Okay. So humidors, how does it then transition to you're leaving the law?
Sure. So it was great that we talked about Steph because that's the basis. Stephanie is a great life partner and so supportive.
Right.
And she saw that I wasn't happy in the office, but I'm the kind of guy that I probably would have stuck with it because I thought that was the right thing to do.
And you kept hearing your grandfather in your head?
Yeah. And you know, when you get married and you're like an old fashioned guy, you're supposed to work and support the family and make sure there's at least a baseline there. Yeah. So everybody else can, you know, you can have a family and do your thing, you know?
Right.
And well, Stephanie, she didn't need that. She had her own thing going and she was able to see that I wasn't loving it. And she's like, you know, you've got a wait list of like 6 months of clients. Which if you're doing it full time, maybe means 2 months of clients.
Yeah.
But if you're doing this full time, I think you could really do it. And so, you know, to be a good employee, I gave my boss 6 weeks notice and I said, at this date, we want to quit. And what we ended up doing is when we got married, we didn't take a honeymoon at the time because, you know, you're like young kids, you're trying to save money and everything else. So we took like a 3 month honeymoon in Europe as soon as I quit my job. Stephanie took a leave, got her sister to take over. We went all over Europe and had such a great time.
How
but then it came
fun.
Back and just put our nose to the grindstone and then just been working ever since.
And when you came back from Europe, did you start the business in D.C. or you went back?
No, we started the business in D.C. Oh, so okay. I used my law degree. We incorporated the business back in, I guess, 97. And then ever since then, we've been doing it. But yeah, right in D.C. And then when we first started, I was basically a hammer for hire. I would build your design for your desk, or I had a lot of designers I worked with at the time, and maybe they needed something that was sort of odd or different or a weird size that they couldn't find just off the rack somewhere. Also, there was a lot of remodeling going on in Washington, D.C. at the time, these big Victorian homes. So I would do windows, screen doors. When you're younger, you kind of have to just take what you can get.
And so you were, at this point, more of a fancy handyman?
I think that's probably true.
Hammer for hire. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, all the guys who were real contractors and had wood shops were 20, 30, 40 miles outside of the city. Mm-hmm. And I was right in Adams Morgan in D.C.
Yeah,
so it
right
was
in the
like,
heart of it.
Yeah. So it was great, too, having the social network from law school and then having all Stephanie's good clients and friends from her bar. And so that sort of networking
generates
thing,
lots of
clients. It's better than any advertising you can ever have. So it worked out really well. And then in the meantime, I was sort of coming up with my own designs and my own thoughts, which led me back to the work that we used to do on the farm with logging and stacking lumber and just these basically live edge designs and kind of finding the right tree for the job and letting.
What does live edge mean?
So regular lumber, like you see decks built out of or things like that, it's just cut into dimensions. So you make 2x6s out of a log or 2x4s or whatever and just square edges and it's kind of homogeneous as a product.
Yes.
But I really like to celebrate the live edge. So you take a log and then you saw it through and through. And so you just end up with a boule or a stack of slabs and they all have their natural live edge, which is the exact shape of the tree. But with the bark removed. So that's all you do is remove the bark and then cut them through and through.
Okay.
And that's what I really respond to in my work. And I started to gravitate away from hammer for hire to more like,
how
these are my designs.
How long into having your own business did that start to happen for you, that process of wanting to design your own?
Well, things? I was designing my own stuff with live edges and sort of out there designed features that weren't really seen in the mainstream right from the beginning. So in 93, 94, 95, my humidors were super classic, you know, just boxes that were polished up. But the coffee tables that I would do for friends' weddings and things like that, where I could really be creative. And then that started to get a little bit more traction. People started to see that and sort of see value in that.
Yeah.
And then through the course of 3 or 4 years, it became all about the live edge material And the story of, you know, I would go back to the farm and I would saw trees and dry the lumber and then bring them back to DC. And so it became a whole all about the story and where you found the lumber. And there was a sustainability piece, too, that I think we were kind of early adopters on, which is it's the way I grew up. My grandfather, along with other sort of things that he really tried to instill in us, was the idea that you've got this beautiful piece of land. Your ancestors were smart enough to keep it and get it going. And it'll provide you a living, but you've got to take what you need and leave the rest for the next guy. Right. You don't just go take everything that's great. Yeah. And then, sorry about you kids.
Bye, that's it. Yeah.
So it was a good lesson.
And like
so,
a seventh anyway, generation philosophy. Like,
yeah. I think if we could all live a little bit more like that, we might be a little bit better off. But so, not everybody's lucky enough to be born into a family that has a 1,000 acres.
They're
either.
Not.
So I'm
they're definitely
fortunate.
Not. That's so lucky. Yeah. So on the family farm, do you have one kind of tree, all different kinds of trees?
Right. You know, I get asked that question so much, and it's so funny. Because to me, it seems simple, but like we're so divorced from our natural world in that way. So this is really a natural forest. So it's whatever the squirrels plant and the birds plant. And rather than like a tree farm where you plant black walnut because you have it in your head that you think black walnut is going to be valuable in 20 years when this is ready, like any other crop. Instead, whatever grows there, whatever wants to grow there, kind of whatever's supposed to grow there, that's what grows.
I love that. So all different, whatever.
Yeah, it's
squirrels plant.
I think the technical name for it is a naturally occurring Midwestern hardwood forest. So maybe it says just exactly what it is.
So that is your workshop.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then the inspiration and the workshop and our lumberyard, really. And then so I feel it's my responsibility and what I really try to do is just sustainably harvest from that. So we can make a living, but it's there and actually getting better and better every year for the next generation.
Well,
yeah,
that's very optimistic because you don't hear that a lot.
Well, I think for me, it's more important to just kind of, again, take what you need and leave the rest for the next guy, leave the rest for the next generation. Because, you know, we could have somebody clear cut the place, put $3 million in the bank, and then just move to California.
Yes, that would be so sad.
It would be sad. Yeah.
When did you move from DC back to the Midwest to this time back to St. Louis, right?
So we had just had our son Oscar in 1999.
I want to talk about him.
Yeah, he's a good kid. So he was like a millennium baby. You know, he was born
1999.
Yeah, but the day before 2000, December. Well, not the day before, December 29th. So. Okay. Anyway, we had had Oscar. It's difficult. I mean, everybody that has kids knows it's great if you can have your family around for the help, you know, like your mom and your uncles and your sisters and stuff. Just for the help, not necessarily even to take care of the kid, but for the moral support, whatever you need. And we happened to be out to visit the farm in 2001, I guess. So Oscar was two. And I have to say, my mom, like, really ponied up. She came out and spent over a month when Oscar was born. Super helpful. And she's just... to this day, she's the most helpful. She's like my biggest fan.
Amazing.
Stephanie's biggest fan. So anyway, she came out and helped.
So besides being an incredible mother and grandmother and coming out for a month when you had a newborn, which is, that's like heaven sent stuff right there.
It is. You put a price on that. Yeah. It's exactly what you need.
It is. So she worked on the farm with your family.
Yeah. And she's the oldest sibling of that generation. So she was the oldest of her siblings, too. You know, kind of that boss mentality, oldest kid.
Yeah, I'm the oldest.
Oh, are you? So you know all about it.
Bossy boots.
Okay, there you go.
She also, Art tells me, because he had some of her delicious, was it pickled items? He couldn't stop talking about it.
Well, yeah.
But by this point, I was so over his calls about the amazing food he was having while I'm like home with sick children. I was like, that's great,
babe. You're not
even
taking the calls anymore.
Fine.
You just like write the voicemail.
Have a good, but then again, it would also be days where I wouldn't hear from him.
So our family is pretty hardcore German on both sides. So pickled everything.
Pickled beets,
pickled green beans, pickled asparagus. Oh, sauerkraut is like the baseline thing that my mom does. And she does an actual ton of sauerkraut every year.
An actual ton, 2,000 pounds.
Yeah, she gets 2,000 pounds of cabbage from friends of hers, you know, on Produce Row. It probably comes from California for all I know. Oh. But then we make sauerkraut and we do it as a big family project. And then 6 to 8 weeks later, it's ready to take out of these giant crocks and then can. And then my mom, she loves the whole idea of sort of farm to table and knowing where your food comes from. And she's always been that way. And so she helped start and runs a couple local farmers markets. And so then she sells her sauerkraut there and her home canned jams and jellies. where we pick plums from our trees and raspberries.
She sounds like the most awesome
She's
person.
Pretty great. She's
so
pretty
she
great.
She runs two farmers markets.
Yeah, she's on the board, so she helps run them. Yeah. Yeah.
And besides the sauerkraut and the pickling of everything, what were you saying before I interrupted you? Fruits?
Oh, yeah.
Jams?
Jams and jellies, and then lots of fresh fruits and vegetables during the growing season. So, you know, things like kale and tomatoes and things like that nature. Just kind of whatever. You know, she's retired and she's got the greenest thumb in the world. And
she
so
does.
Whatever she feels like growing that year, she'll throw a little bit of this and a little bit of that. I mean, she grows more stuff on accident than most people grow on purpose. She is amazing.
On accident? Yeah. She's like, whoops, there's these perfect, I don't know.
Oh, gosh. My mom has a lemon tree and actually grows lemons. She pushes it in the garage in the wintertime and has grow lights and stuff. I mean, she just loves it. She just loves it.
She puts it in the garage? You can move trees?
Well, if your son is me, yeah, I have a forklift. Yeah.
I see. She has some help.
Yeah, a little bit.
That is honestly amazing.
Yeah.
And there should be a whole show on your mom.
Yeah, she's...
How old is she?
I think she just turned 72. If I get it wrong, she'll probably kill me, but 72. Yeah.
Ish.
She's grandmother age.
That is really special and amazing. She should give lessons, too, between woodworking and jam making.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, she learned so much of that stuff from her mother, who's still living, my grandmother, Evelyn.
She is?
Yeah. She's 93.
Evelyn.
And, you know, we were talking about industrial arts a little bit, and my grandmother and my mother, both 4-H and FFA leaders, and teaching the young kids, generations of kids, how to sew, how to cook, how to keep house, how to do the garden, how to deal with animals, all that kind of stuff. I mean,
I
it's just these skills that were passed on.
Grandma Evelyn and your mom could start a homestead here
yeah.
and charge so much money because no one knows how to do any of it out here.
Well, yeah. I think the newer generation, you know, the people that you're saying enjoy craft.
Yes.
But there's probably a niche market there somewhere.
There is.
Yeah. We happened to be out at the farm with Oscar, and it was just one of those things. The week, the weather was perfect. The birds were singing, the grass was green, and Stephanie said, you know, we should really think about moving back to the farm. And I would never have sort of pushed that on Steph because she's a city girl. She grew up in the city. I met her in D.C. That's her thing. That's her sort of...
City mouse.
Yeah, that's her thing. So we rolled the idea around for a while, and as luck would have it, maybe 3 months later, one of my mom's really good friends from high school said, hey, we're thinking of selling our house and we want to build a small house because our kids are all gone off to college and everything. And it was like a mile from the family farm where I grew up. And it's this 1871 farmhouse on 40 acres.
Gosh.
It needed completely restored, which is right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And so we just took the plunge. And so in 2002,
so that was a job for you, or you bought that house?
No, we bought the house.
We bought the house
to live in.
Okay.
Yep. So we didn't move back like into the house where I grew up. We moved into a farm that was just adjacent to that.
The friend of your mom's from high school.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
So all the forces conspired for you to bring you back.
Yeah.
Was your mother thrilled?
My mother was thrilled.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. She was so excited. And then not long after we moved back, we had our second child, Wilhelmina. And then, you know, it's just been onward and upward.
Did you redo your entire home there?
We did. We did one of these crazy things. We had restored our house in Washington, D.C. as well. So we kind of knew what we were in for, but we were just young marrieds then with no kids, and it was a lot easier.
So much harder.
Yeah. So we did gutted the downstairs and lived in the upstairs of the new home, and then we gutted the upstairs and lived in the downstairs. So we were like covered with plaster dust for 2 years. You know how that goes.
And with toddlers, how fun.
Yeah.
Screws,
watch out for those rusty nails.
Oh, there's a chainsaw. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it was good in the end.
And was your business big enough at that point that you just had a lot of clients? It was sort of seamless. Or what did you start really as a small business, sort of restarting?
That's a great point. So I had a really good business going in D.C. And so for probably the first 3 or 4 years, we were back in St. Louis or in this, you know, on the farm in Dow. I call it St. Louis because, you know, if you say Illinois, everybody thinks you're from Chicago.
Okay, so you're in Dow, and that is where you live, but you say St. Louis. How far a drive is it?
It's about 35, 40 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're right across the river, really, but it's a world apart, you know.
Yes.
St. Louis is a pretty big town, sports teams and the whole thing, and then you're on the farm, and it's just pretty rural. So anyway, for the first 3 or 4 years, I was doing the reverse of what I had been doing. I was taking finished stuff back to D.C., Maryland, Virginia, and out in Long Island, where I had a lot of clients.
Do you personally take it?
Oh, yeah. That was a big part of our whole... It was born of necessity at first that I would deliver everything, because I do a lot of really big things, big in scale, like 15-foot conference tables made out of a single plank of lumber, stuff like that. And so it's really tough to get somebody to even deliver that right. if you can trust them to do it. You know how things are with shipping sometimes.
Right.
It can be really, really difficult. So yeah, I would make the trek. I still am kind of that way. It doesn't really bother me to drive 20 hours. It's like, it's not a big deal.
What do you do, rent a huge, big
group? No, we have delivery trucks.
You have them.
Yeah, yeah. And at the time, I had like a big Mercedes delivery van.
Okay.
And we still have those, you know, but now we've got several.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the way I did it.
So I just want to say, so Stephanie, mm-hmm. after encouraging you to leave your law job,
yeah.
when she encouraged you to start this business, she runs it with you and she's the business side. She manages it, right?
That's absolutely right. She didn't come in right at the beginning, but a couple of years after we moved back to St. Louis area, and then after we had Willa, and Willa was kind of up on her feet, then Stephanie jumped in full time with me. And that's when the business actually really took off. It became a real business where Stephanie could handle all the marketing, all the internet type stuff, anything that really wasn't woodworking, Stephanie
so cool.
has handled. Yeah. And she has made it an amazing business.
So when you moved back, you had all your clients in DC, and then presumably you were getting some clients in St. Louis and Dow and local clients. And then how did word start to spread
yeah.
elsewhere?
What's funny about that is I think in the Midwest, we have a little bit of a problem sometimes. We're like an inferiority complex a little bit. So if you're from St. Louis and you're trying to sell stuff to people in St. Louis, it's like, I'm not sure about you. Maybe I'll go to New York and see what they have there. So I was doing tons of shows in New York and LA. And then my other big market was the mountain states like Aspen, doing stuff in Jackson Hole, Park City, Salt Lake.
Where so you had a lot of clients homes. There.
Yeah. And I would go out and actually do furniture shows so people could see it, touch it, feel it.
Okay. But,
you know, this was back in the early 2000s.
Right. Pre-Instagram.
Yeah. No Instagram. Facebook was just kind of new. Yeah. And, you know, advertising in the New Yorker or something was out of reach for
right.
a real small business like us. So we would go out and people would see it and touch and feel it. And we would make personal relationships and sell furniture that way. So that's how we really got going. And what's funny about that to me is, so we'd be featured in Dwell magazine, or we got a feature in Architectural Digest magazine. And then people in St. Louis would see that. And then we could finally get some St.
Louis
That would
Louis give
business.
You the street cred
yeah.
to get your local
yeah.
friends.
Yeah. And then the other thing that happened is we got involved in the sort of in the infancy of a really serious food scene in St. Louis.
Okay. Well, we have to talk about this because I've never been. My
yeah.
husband went to find you and
yeah.
your producing partners
yeah.
because you might have something exciting happening soon.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can talk about it. So who knows? But
yeah.
he would call me from the very first day that he got there and say,
I think we almost broke Art. I think what he
Yeah. I feel
there.
Like he might not have come home to me. He was really debating. He was like, this
yeah.
place is wonderful.
Yeah.
Everyone is so nice here. It's gorgeous. And the food is outstanding. He wouldn't stop talking about the food. He'd be like, we're on our way to our second dinner.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that St. Louis had such a thriving and bustling food scene.
Yeah. You can tell by looking at me that people from the Midwest are not afraid to eat.
What do you mean,
all.
Dave?
Yeah, this is not the California body over here.
Listen, you look the picture of health.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. So it's really great. I was saying that Midwesterners have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder sometimes or a little bit of an inferiority complex, but there's an amazing food scene in St. Louis. And it was sparked by a couple guys who I happened to meet and then do a bunch of business with. Gerard Kraft is a great one. And, you know, he ended up winning a James Beard Award. And then my friend Alex Donnelly from Joyas, he won a James Beard Award. And then Kevin Nashin from Sydney Street and Peacemaker. So these guys, they decided they were going to make a foothold in St. Louis and just sort of, I don't think they set out to change.
Are they from St. Louis?
You know, that's what's funny. Kevin's from Santa Fe. Alex is from St. Louis, born and bred, grew up on the hill. It's
okay.
just a whole thing. And then Gerard's from D.C., but these guys, they saw an opportunity in St. Louis to kind of create a foothold and do their thing. And I don't even know if they knew what they were creating, but the city was ready for it. People were ready for it. And they worked so hard, thanklessly for years, and then started to get these accolades. And the food is incredible.
Yes,
I mean, the
Art
food scene
me.
Is incredible.
He was dropping James Beard Michelin star things.
Yeah.
I'm now
yeah.
very jealous that I didn't get to go on the trip with him. And
yeah.
you are friends with all these people, and you make the tables inside the restaurant or the bars or both.
Yeah. So what we really do in our business is flat surfaces. So
okay.
whatever that is in a restaurant, we'll do it. So we do a lot of bars. We do a lot of tables. In our private client business, we do a lot of headboards, coffee tables, things of that nature. So yeah, it was just like luck and perseverance where we met these guys and we happened to do some tables for Gerard and then people saw those, Gerard Kraft. And then people saw those and they wanted to do that. And then I'm not very subtle in my marketing. I'm like, hey, listen, you guys are opening a restaurant. I mean, not everybody wants to win a James Beard Award. And I'm not saying it's my tables, but maybe it was.
Yeah. Maybe there's a little Midas touch happening. Yeah, you never know. Like
that. But so, that's been great for business and for marketing. It's sort of that.
And also for your own food intake.
Well, that's
yes, you
true.
Go and you get the royal treatment.
We have been very, very lucky. The guys, they're so nice to Stephanie and I. And now our kids are so spoiled.
Are they?
One of the greatest restaurants in St. Louis right now is Louie. And about maybe 8 or 10 years ago, we bought a little city house too. And our kids ended up going to Clayton for high school, and which is in town. And our friend Matt McGuire, who's an alum of some of Gerard's restaurants and some other great stuff he's done in the past, opened Louie right down the street from our house. And I mean, it's really bad. It would be like being down the street from Salt and Straw, which we are where we're staying. And I mean, I can't walk home at night without getting a scoop of that ice cream.
You can't pass that up.
And no, I can't walk in my house in St. Louis without going past Louis and being, well, maybe I'll just get this plate of gnocchi or whatever it is. And it's just killing me. And now my kids are so spoiled. They think Louis is like McDonald's.
That's just normal for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have incredible food in St. Louis. Mm. You've made all these friends and business connections with these chefs. You've done a lot of the restaurants. And then the clients that you have now, is it mostly private clients? Do you still do furniture shows? Is it all over the map?
Well, you know, it's really funny. And again, this is how Stephanie has really helped so much. She helps with our marketing plan. We work with professionals all the time. I think one of the things law school taught me is you need to know what you don't know. And you need to know when to hire professionals. And then when you hire a professional, you have to let them do their job. Mm-hmm. So we hire marketing and advertising professionals all the time. And what we've found out is in the last few years, the costs and the expenses and all that stuff with shows are going up and up.
Yeah.
And then the return is going down and down. And so we have refocused everything to different marketing strategies where we have an amazing website and we do a lot of stuff on Instagram and
do you find
Facebook.
Instagram helpful for your business?
I really do.
Yeah.
I really do. So it's kind of a weird thing. I started Instagram when Instagram was pretty new. Maybe it was 2013, 14, something like that. Maybe 2012.
Okay.
Immediately got 40,000 followers, like within weeks. Never has moved because they changed the algorithms. And
yeah,
so you can't
do it. I don't understand all
but
that.
We never bought any followers. We never do promotions or anything like that. So we have this core group of like hardcore fans that really found us because they were interested in us.
Yeah.
And through that group, it's a lot of woodworkers, which is great. You know, you get professional stuff like that and you get ideas from people and they ask you. We try to be really responsive. But then also some of our biggest jobs have come directly from our Instagram presence. So it's just a different way of doing business and we try to keep evolving. What's amazing to me is when I was a kid and when I was starting, everybody wanted to come and touch it and feel it. And what is this product? And, you know, it's kind of like this is the way I still feel about clothes. I don't buy anything without I go try it on first, you know? But now people are a lot more comfortable with buying something that they have never even seen.
Yeah.
So.
Because they make returns easy.
That's I guess that's true. I guess, but some of this stuff that we make is super custom.
Yes.
But we also work really hard to facilitate that. We have great photography, really good communication, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Do you have apprentices in your...
We do. So we have our lead guy. He's basically the guy who makes most of the stuff nowadays. Yeah. You know, I make all the artistic decisions still and manage all everything that goes on the shop. But Eli Cronin, our guy, is just a stud. He's been with us since he's 19.
Really?
And yeah, now he's 26.
And how did he train? How did he know so much about woodworking?
Well, you know, again, just being so lucky growing up where I did and then starting the business on the farm instead of in the city, there's all these farm kids still.
Yeah.
And they're just capable. You know, they know how to work with their hands. They're not afraid to work. They show up places on time. They know where to stand in the forest when you're cutting down trees so they don't get killed.
I don't think a city kid could do any one of those things.
All these things are learnable.
I would die in the forest in 1 second.
No, we wouldn't let that happen.
Thank you.
But all
Left
these things are learnable
own.
Skills. But when you got it, when you have a young person who grew up that way, boy, you're just head and shoulders above.
Also, moving back also gave you all this, you know, future staff.
Well, for sure. Yeah.
That's so great.
Well, in the high school that's really where I went to high school and it's still there and where these guys went to high school, our other guy is Luke, our other full-time guy, they still have manual training in high school.
Okay.
So you can take wood shop or metal shop and all this stuff and you
Hallelujah.
Can see if you like it.
I don't know if that's here. I have never heard of a school that still has woodworking or shop.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah.
So in Dow, in Illinois and in Missouri, is this standard that schools still offer this?
Not all of them. Not all of them, but a lot of the rural areas, yeah, absolutely, you still have it. And, you know, I was kind of on the double track. You could go college prep. Or you could go like the industrial arts kind of.
And you did both.
I did both.
Industrial arts. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always reminded of the story. One of my really good friends is this guy named Chris Williams, and he's a plumber. And I saw him one time, and he's carrying a bucket of sewage down the street.
Mm-hmm.
And he picks it up, and he goes, "Smells like money to me, Dave."
Right?
So, you know.
Yeah.
You can sort of.
Plumbers are crucial.
Oh, my gosh. That's your best friend when your toilet backs up. You need a plumber.
Yeah, right away.
And he knows what to do.
What do you want me to pay you? I will do that. Yeah, that's fine. Please
check.
Come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, getting off topic. But yeah, industrial arts, guys who know how to work with their hands, guys who are not afraid to get a little bit dirty. You know, I'm lucky to have that pool to pull
to draw from.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that it was perfect timing for the slow movement.
Oh, you're so right.
And, you know, slow fashion, whether it's shoes, clothes, mm-hmm. made here,
yeah,
made
people,
by real people.
Really lucky. And it probably has a lot to do with the success of our business, just being lucky hitting that timing where all of a sudden people started to realize you can't outsource everything.
Right.
And actually having a relationship with the person that's building your furniture, in our case, or making your clothes or growing your food is really
important.
It's important. And it enriches your life in a way that it's hard to even put, I don't know, any sort of.
Well, not to sound all out there, but when you get something, whether it's clothes, which I have a few pieces that are made by people, but I don't have furniture yet. Maybe we will in the future. It does feel like there's an energy that is just different from something that didn't come.
It's not like that disposable type thing. You know, there's a time and place for IKEA. You have your first apartment after college and you know you're not going to be there more than 6 months or a year.
You're full-fledged adults, and we still have IKEA. But,
there's a time and place for that. But then you get to the point, we all hope, where, you know, you're deciding you're going to buy a dining room table, or you're going to buy a desk, or coffee, whatever the case may be. And maybe you want something that's going to really last, and it's not going to go out of style in a couple of years.
It gets to be real usable pieces of art in your home that you're actually
I love that.
Loving.
When it all comes together, you have a perfectly functional piece of art.
Yeah.
Might be passed down for generations.
Yeah, you don't just have to look at it on the wall.
Yeah, yeah. So, okay,
and your kids, do either one of them have the woodworking bug gene in them?
Well, I was guilty, like a lot of people are, of trying to sort of nudge a little bit.
Yeah.
Oscar, come on, man. You know, you. And the funny thing is, Oscar, he's very creative.
Right.
Yeah, he has better design sense than I do, for sure. And just natural gifts that way. But in our family, he's what they call a little bit work brittle. He's not looking to go out and get dirty and go in the woods all day.
Brittle.
But I've forced him to do it a few times, and he's actually really good. And he's a good kid, and he can be a hard worker. But his interests lie somewhere else. He's interested in fashion.
I love
and
it.
Design.
I looked at his Instagram.
And
his makeup. I know. I wish he could do my makeup. I saw beautiful things.
He's
incredible
really talented.
Eyeliner.
Yeah, he's really talented with that stuff, and he's so artistic. His sister's the same way with her drawing.
Drama, right?
She's Yeah, in the regular sort of lane, her drawing and her artwork that she does is amazing, but drama and singing and dancing, I mean, she just has this charisma.
Mm-hmm.
Just like everyone else, she can be a little nervous and a little anxious off stage. She hits that stage and those lights come on and forget about it. She has you in the palm of her hand. And I mean, of course, I'm in the bag for her. She's my daughter.
Well,
but we hear from other people too, so I feel like I'm not too off the mark.
No, it's been corroborated.
Yeah. Yeah, she just played Dorothy in the school play, and this in the school play of Wizard of Oz, which is, of course, the lead role, and you are on stage the entire time, and she's only a sophomore, and so all the senior girls were kind of giving her the side eye, which, you know, that's always good.
Mm-hmm. That's always good.
Yeah.
So are there any projects that you have right now that you're super excited about, or is there a dream project that you have that you haven't done yet?
Oh, I'm pretty even-handed when it comes to that stuff. I like what I'm doing right now all the time.
Okay.
I love staying busy. I love getting up early, having an agenda, checking things off the list all day, and then going to bed really tired.
Yeah.
You know, I just love that. And then you wake up energized and ready to do it again. Right now, one interesting thing that I think we're doing, a good client of mine has got together with a group of investors and they're building a food truck garden in an area that's been sort of underserved in St. Louis.
That's cool.
And so they're going to have a big, huge sort of beer hall communal area.
I need to go to St. Louis. Yeah.
And then they'll have a rotating food truck court of like
with
30 different
garden.
Food truck with a beautiful garden. Mm. And in the summertime, they'll have, it's like an amphitheater situation, so they can have concerts and bands. And then the inside, you know, you can rent for weddings or it's just, you know, open, whatever. And we're going to do some giant tables.
You like are
30 footers.
So it will be all communal tables?
There'll be some individual stuff, but the idea is communal. So you can get the most seating and it's kind of forces everybody to kind of have their thing and enjoy other people, meet other people and just, I don't know, just kind of give that beer hall feel.
That sounds
so
really
we're excited
cool.
about that. I think that's going to be a really interesting project.
And you have clients all over and you bring the furniture out and do you help install it in their home? Or
oh, for sure. Yeah, I sort of tongue in cheek, but it's really true. You buy a $50,000 table from me and you're gonna get to see me more than you even want to. I'll be right over.
And I love that when I asked you if you would do this podcast, you said, oh, and then I said, I want to hear how you got into furniture design, but don't tell me now. Let's save it for the podcast. And you said, oh, no, I love talking about myself. You said, I'll tell you now. I'll tell you then.
Tell you again.
It's so good.
My wife, she needs a medal. Yeah, she puts up with me a lot.
No, it's so great.
I love the sound of my own voice.
But I love
I
how
fit
much
right
you,
in here in LA.
Perfect. Yes, it's a perfect fit. But I also think I love how much you love your work and what you do.
I'm really
that I, it just it feels like it comes from such a warm place
well,
that I just want to hear more
saying,
of it.
Thank you for saying that. And I really do enjoy it. And I understand how fortunate I was to be able to find this path. And to be able to not only find what I enjoy doing, but then to be able to make a nice living out of it as well. And then, like, sprinkles on top, being able to work with my wife productively every day. You know how that can be. It's tough being married.
Yes.
It's a job. It's like you have to work at it.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a lot of love there and everything else. But then at the end of the day, sometimes you need a little space. And then you work together, too.
Uh-huh. And then you got to go home and have dinner with them.
Yeah.
But
it's been so great. It has been like zero regrets about the way we've lived our life. We've been so lucky.
Well, it's the most beautiful story and it's everything that I love to hear, especially on this podcast, that you followed your bliss. It's working out wonderfully well, beautifully for you.
Yeah.
And you get to work with your wife and all these different projects keep coming up for you. And the fact that you've straddled both worlds of law and art, industrial arts. Now I know that term.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably a 50s term, but I think that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Now I want to bring it back. I want to bring that term back.
Boy, I think it's a great thing. And just to expose kids to different things in school will be something,
I
you know?
Wish that shop was offered.
Yeah,
or
STEM is great, but it's not for everybody.
It isn't.
Yeah.
So if anybody wanted to reach out to you, do they do that through Instagram or your website?
Yeah, we're pretty easy to find. The only hard thing about me is STINE is the way we spell my last
name.
Okay,
so on Instagram, you're at David Stein Furniture.
Yes.
And Stein is STINE.
Yes.
You can also, you have a beautiful website, which you've told me about, but I haven't seen.
Yeah, it's David Stein Woodworking.
Okay.
Yeah. But if you Google David Stein, it's me. And then there's a preacher in D.C. and you'll know that's not me.
Not the preacher. Thank you so much for coming and
Thank
talking
you
to
so
me.
Much.
I appreciate it. And I love
feel like
your
I could
story.
Talk to you all day.
Oh, I could
you are
do
so
it.
Great.
I'm ready. I could chat forever.
Well,
thank you. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please click subscribe and leave me a 5-star review. If you love what this is about and feel called to recommend Greatness Adjacent, please spread the word to anyone you know who may want to hear about real people doing really special things.